Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Comic Book Legion Podcast. I am your host, Clay, and this week we're going to be doing something a little different. This week, Mark is unfortunately not able to make it onto the episode. He actually had a family matter to attend to, so he is actually in Florida at the moment. And then, of course, I believe he is going to take a trip to China, which I am super jealous of. You know, I've always wanted to go to really far off places. And for me, my place I would want to go to would be Spain, just because my dad's side of the family is there from there. But I would really love to go visit Spain. But Mark is going to China for 2 weeks, I believe. So he won't be here for this episode, next episode, or the episode after that. But I hope you guys stay on. Today, I'm actually going to be playing one of my episodes of Fanboy Comics podcast that me and Mark recorded talking about The Walking Dead. I know you guys usually listen to this episode, or this podcast, should I say, for DC content, but I know a lot of you guys are really big fans of Mark, and I know that he dealt with Marvel, Indie, and DC way back when he was doing top 10s for the week, and, you know, Walking Dead was one of his favorite comic book stories ever. So we sat down and talked about volume 1 of that book, and I think we're still wanting to talk about volume 2, volume 3, and so on and so forth. But this was actually recorded a couple months ago. It's actually episode 2 on my season 3 of Fanboy Comics podcast. If you guys would like to go subscribe to that, please, that would be awesome. But of course, talking about subscriptions, you guys should definitely check out the Nerdy Legion podcasts. That's the network that we here at Comic Book Legion are a part of. They are great guys, really, really fun crew. They have a plethora I can't talk. I am so tired. I've been here trying to think about what to say and what to do before the actual episode starts for you guys, but I just got home from work. I'm tired. It's almost midnight, but they have a plethora of podcasts, all things nerdy, you know, Marvel, DC, movies, television, everything out there. Go check them out. And our sister podcast, the Fantasy Football podcast with Mark and Jake is there as well. And also, Nerdgrounds, Jake's podcast, was even now released on the Nerdy Legion network. So please go check them out as well. You know, all great people, like I said. But let's go ahead and move on to the subject at hand. Me and Mark talking about The Walking Dead, Volume 1. Hey guys, Clay here with a new episode. This episode was really, really fun. Got to talk to a good friend of mine. Of course, I talk to him every week, but I got to record with him a little bit more with this episode. He is my co-host on Comic Book Legion podcast. I'm talking to Mark this week about The Walking Dead, volume number 1. It was very, very fun. I hope you guys enjoy. And remember, please, 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 please go download Anchor so that way you guys can send me voice messages that I can put here on the show. Ask me questions. I want to get involved in some sort of community here on Anchor, and I want to have a lot of fun with it. So please, please, please go check that out. Listen to the prior episode, and remember also, I am relaunching seasons 1 and 2 of these interviews back to back, so that way we can have our whole catalog here on Anchor. It's gonna be so much fun to dive back into those, but here we go. Hope you enjoy. Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Fanboy Comics Podcast. I am your host, Clay, and today we have an awesome guest. A lot of you have already heard him because I already have a show with him. He is my co-host with Comic Book Legion Podcast, and of course that being Mark. And today he chose an awesome book to talk about. It's not anybody with capes. No superpowers, and it's more on the creepy side. You know, I am not a big horror genre person. This was the start to the big hype of the, I guess, zombie. What would you say, Mark? Would you say this was the big zombie push for comics?
I mean, yeah. You know, you had, like, the George Romero stuff, and then Zack Snyder had, like, his movies. So there was a time period, but I think The Walking Dead with the comics and then later on with the TV show, I think it kind of gave, you know, zombies that push where now it's, you know, upper echelon of, I guess you could say, of the zombie hype. Like, this was, like, for a period of time, this was, like, Game of Thrones. It was up there.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure. But, Mark, how you been? I know Breaking the Fourth Wall, we recorded yesterday, so it's not like I haven't seen you in a while.
Thanks for having me, man. It's such a privilege. I've always wanted to be on the show.
So I was
more waiting. I'm like, man, when's my freaking invite?
You already answered, but to be a little bit more specific, you know, everybody knows when it comes to this show, I interview individuals about the books that got them into comics or some of their just favorite books overall, and I ask them some simple questions. First question being, what book are we talking about today?
We're talking about The Walking Dead, Volume 1. I you know, with the book ending, I'm still not over the book actually being over. Like, I need a documentary on why this ended the way that it ended. But it's one of those things that, since I've never had closure, I feel like I still don't have closure with it ending. I've always been interested. I think I've even, like, teased it on our chats and stuff, that I've always wanted to do, like, a reread and kind of, you know, talk about the book again and see, like, where it was from the beginning and now seeing it through, like, a lens of, I know the story, but now I want to know the nuances. It's just, it's always scary when you're at 192 issues. So right when you mentioned, like, hey, you know, can you record Wednesday and Thursday? I was like, dude, you know what? This is my time. So I was like, you know what? Let's do Volume 1, issues 1 through 6, and let's kind of go from the beginning of what was an incredible, you know, comic book story.
You know, when there was, I think it was 190 or 191, when there was that big death.
Yes.
You know, at the very end of that one character. So when we talked about that on our Comic Book Legion show, and I think we talked about it actually right after recording because you didn't want to spoil anything. I had told you I've only read about 112 issues. So I haven't even finished the book. Reading this volume again made me really want to start. And the really cool thing about it is I have a stopping point. I have a stopping point because it ended. For me to jump into a book that is so far in, it was really hard for me to be like, okay, I need to get back into it.
Now that's kind of like saying I want to get into Spawn. Issue 300.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be doing the daring thing. I jumped back on 300. So, and okay. I was completely lost, for sure.
I mean, but, clearly.
But there was a part where, you know, it felt familiar, so I was okay with reading that. And I feel like Walking Dead will do the same thing when I finally get to that point. And especially now, you know, when I'm actually going to be reading all the way through. But Walking Dead, Volume 1, which is issues 1 through 6. Mark, when was the first time you read this book?
Oh, man. Okay. I don't know exactly when the TV show started, but I know, like, my comic book history when I jumped into comics was 2005. I want to say it was around maybe 2006, 2007. Is the first time I read it. Like, there have already been some issues that have been released, and I was kind of already into the point where I loved the comic book thing, and now I was ready to try to do stuff outside of, you know, DC or Marvel. So very unfamiliar with indie comics, and I told the guy, I'm like, hey, give me something. Like, I went to the employee Sam, and I'm like, hey Sam, hook me up. Give me something that you think that I would like that's independent, that has nothing to do with, like, superheroes. And he mentioned The Walking Dead. he actually gave me, and this still to this day, it hurts my soul. They still had number ones in the back issues. And looking at a number one, I was like, all right, let me open this up. I mean, it's a cool cover. I'm like, all right, you know, Tony Moore, he's a great artist. I opened it. I saw it was black and white. I was like, nah. So I closed a number one of The Walking Dead, a first print, and I put it right back. And I'm like, forget this crap. I don't want to read this. Who wants to read a black and white comic book?
Mars.
So don't talk to me. Okay. Don't talk to me. So I picked up the book. I put it away. And my first indie book that I read was, I want to say it was actually Spawn, just because he looked cool and I remember the movie. And I bought an issue and I thought it sucked. So then when I saw that the movie, when they were announcing a TV, like with A&E, they were going to be doing a show, I went back and I'm like, no, I need to read this. So I ended up buying a trade and I bought volume one. Absolutely loved it. I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. And then I went back. I'm like, man, I need to buy a number one. And it was already over like $1,000. So in my mind, I was never able to forgive myself that I could have had an issue one for $4.99. And I passed it up because it was black and white. Not knowing what indie comics can do in terms of resale value, it still haunts me to this day, because when I have my Walking Dead collection of my floppies, I started at issue two because I was never able to afford number one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mark.
It hurts, man. It hurts.
That hurts my soul. That hurts my soul.
Yeah, I will probably say it's like 2008, 2009 is when I like officially jumped on the train and I have never looked back.
Nice. Very nice. So we all know, you know, Walking Dead has been a huge staple in today's generation. Like you said, they had the A&E TV show. They still have it. There was a time where if you didn't get to watch it during the day, it would come on at like 11 p.m. to midnight in black and white. So it was really, really cool that they would do that. Mm-hmm. So majority of these people know what the story is about, but why don't you tell us, what is this volume one about?
Volume one brings us to the beginning of how everything, in a way, it started, but we never get to know why. And it starts with Rick Grimes and Shane, his partner Shane. They are both cops in Kentucky getting ready to stop a crime. And with this crime, unfortunately, Rick gets shot, and now he is stuck in the hospital, and he's in a coma. Well, just like you've seen in many fantasy kind of movies, oh, someone wakes up from a coma. Usually, if you're doing like those romantic comedies, that person that you initially loved, and now they love someone else, and you're trying to get them back. In this case, no, he wakes up, and now when he's trying to find his family, or actually just trying to find some person that's alive, Rick Grimes actually realizes, I'm in the middle of an apocalypse. What happened? Like, how long have I been out? So here he is on this journey trying to find his family. And not only trying to find his family, but again, still trying to find humanity in the midst of just seeing something that he just doesn't understand, which is these walkers, these zombies. Lo and behold, later on, now, how far do you want me to get into this?
Well, we can do a little bit more discussion throughout this interview. I'm going to ask you some other questions. But, you know, on this reread, I forgot how sensitive Rick was to the fact that these people are actually, like, zombified and dead. And, like, because there comes a point where he is trying to get back home, and he sees a zombie with a bicycle and is just like laying on the ground, like just chomping at nothing. And he actually like gets sick and he throws up, you know?
Yeah.
And then he steals the bike and he's like, oh God, you know, it just hits him like in the middle of a bike ride. He's like, oh God, what did I just see? What am I looking at here? And then later on in the story, when he finally gets his get up and he's a little bit more confident on where he needs to go to find his family, he goes back to that exact same zombie, and in a humane way, he's like, hey, I'm going to put you out of your misery, and shoots the zombie in the head.
Yeah.
And then just keeps going. So it's, and you see a lot of that in the TV show. You see that a lot in, still in the book, you know, whenever they see a zombie, it seems, you kind of see the sadness in their face when they have to do, when they have to do that. And I feel like later on in the story, they definitely kind of, you know, get,
they definitely come to terms with it.
Yeah. Stone faced with it, and they just do it. But I forgot how human, and I know that's really hard to say because, you know, they're all humans here, they're the only humans left, but because of how hardened a lot of these characters became throughout the story of this book, to realize where they were in the very beginning, it's very eye-opening to the characterization throughout this story, and it's really cool.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest thing that was very, it was kind of like, ooh, man, I have to kind of remember what lens I'm reading this on, because I, you know, reading all 100 and I think it was 92, 93 issues, I know what Rick is like. So seeing Rick here, I'm like, dude, this is not what you would do. Like, come on. But it's actually hard because seeing the innocence of the characters that yet, although yes, they have lost some people that you end up seeing in this story arc, I mean, but they haven't really lost anyone really close to them that they know of. You know, some characters have, but the characters that you truly care about, because you don't really care so much about Jim, although you do feel bad for him when you hear his backstory and you find out he's getting sick. But what really got me is just how innocent, but I guess you could say standard, it felt reading Robert Kirkman. Because his dialogue is nowhere near as polished. Like, you could tell that he, you know, obviously, when you're writing for this long, you're gonna get much stronger, you're gonna become a better writer. But this writing that you're seeing in Volume 1, it felt very basic. And it felt very innocent that you kind of get with somebody that's just starting to get into comics or something. That you're like, okay, like this, okay, there's not much, like, gravitas, there's not too much depth to what I'm reading. But I don't know why, it's just like when you see later on the growth of these characters. So it took a while for me to really get back into this part of the world, because this has been, as you can say, I mean, it's been like 10 years for me that I've read this beginning of the story again. So I'm like, whoa, this feels foreign. I feel like I'm reading a new book with, it actually feels like a reboot. That I'm reading characters that I'm familiar with, that I'm familiar with these characters, but I don't know them. And I don't know the writer. It feels like if the writer's trying new tricks. So it was weird, but it was nice.
Now, you told us the first time you picked up this story, but what was the reason that you gravitated towards this book in particular when it came to wanting to actually read it?
I think I just wanted something completely different than what Marvel or DC give you. And usually, yes, you can get some dark stories within it, but it always felt that their version of dark came with boundaries. Kind of wanted something that had no boundaries whatsoever, and I have no idea. Like, literally anything can happen. And that's kind of, so when I was looking for dark, I didn't want something which was like, you know, very spiritual or something like that, because I don't gravitate towards that thing. But because of like Night of the Living Dead and those kind of stuff, those kind of movies, I've always had a thing with zombies. So for some reason, zombies, comic book, this new medium that I'm still kind of new to, where I'm still at like in a honeymoon stage, I just wanted something different. So I literally tried to get the most. And actually, you know what? I'm lying to you. I think before that, I actually read Marvel Zombies. And I remember the first one, which was really their only good one. And Marvel Zombies was a really cool story. So I believe that also, I think, was a, could have been something that kind of like nudged me in this direction, where now I'm getting into independent where there is no boundaries, because I thought Marvel Zombies was a really cool story. So I would maybe, again, I don't know my timelines, but I can possibly say that Marvel Zombies was an influence on why I chose Walking Dead.
Nice. What did you really grasp from reading this story, if you can remember, because you were buying it weekly at that point, or however you were doing the floppies, yeah. From issues 1 through 6, what did you grasp from this story when you were first reading it?
Man, it was tough, because when I started reading The Walking Dead, I just finished watching season 1 of the TV show. So honestly, my first thing when I was reading the comic was, how faithful is it to the show? So when I am looking at like John Bernthal as Shane, yeah, okay, sure, you know Shane, all right, he kind of had something with Laurie. So when I was reading a book, for example, and you see them arguing, I'm like, all right, cool. So this tension happened in the show, but it also happened in the comic. But now when I'm seeing them fighting like in the woods, and then, you know, spoiler alert for whoever's never read the comic, even though it's 10 years old, when Carl like kills Shane, I was like, whoa! So this story completely finished like super early. So I was kind of just trying to see what are the similarities, but then I loved how the comic was completely doing it, although it's similar in terms of setting.
Yeah.
The scene and characterizations and stuff were so different that's what actually made me really enjoy what I was reading. And I was doing it in the lens of a TV show, and let's see what the comic does, like some people do with movies and books.
Yeah.
That was my first thought, but then when I realized how it was going, then, you know, I kind of just went zoomed through the comics until the number that was presently, and then I went back to the show because I didn't want to have that experience where I have a certain lens. I like to see things, you know, naked and then go from there, instead of already having some sort of like, you know, preconceptions of what I believe is going to happen in the story. I don't like doing that.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, that for people who were following the book a lot, as the new seasons were coming out, you got into that big debate, you know, of, you know, how is this character going to relate to his comic book, you know, version? Yeah. Or like if the show was even going to steer into, you know, certain characters or, you know, do whatever. There was a big thing that Walking Dead did was, if they wanted to keep a character alive, the way they died in the book, they would just do that with a different character as an homage of some sort. You know, that was something that was really cool with the show. But with this first 6 issues, who was your favorite character?
Oh no, my favorite was Rick, just because he was the person that Robert Kirkman was making you gravitate towards. So there was an immediate, you know, kind of connection point where, you know, at that time I was engaged when I started reading the book, so I can kind of put myself in the shoes. Like, you know, I've had surgery so many times that I can know what it's like getting out of a hospital, waking up from anesthesia or something, and not really knowing your surroundings. And it actually happened to me when I had hip surgery. I woke up too early and when my leg was still disconnected, and I'm like, oh my God, and I don't have any of my family, and I'm just seeing my leg not connected to my hip. Like, I can see. So I had a lot of connection points with him, because I can see myself having those same kind of reactions. But because of the show, and I saw the show, I was also really interested in Glenn. Glenn was a big part, because I thought Glenn was that very innocent kid that just so happened to be like really lucky. But it was kind of funny, because he was in a way kind of comic relief, that although he never wanted to be put into the harm's way, he was kind of like a pushover. So, you know, just some of the weird, funny kind of little, even though close encounters to death, always happened to him. I don't know why. Just those were like the two. Like, I love the fact when you're seeing Rick, and you see this in the show, but when Rick and Glenn are going to go and look for guns, and they do the whole like, here, let's just chop them up. We've realized that maybe it's the possible smell that it might be able to mask us. Like, I just, like, even in the book, you see Glenn throw up, like, 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
But it happens in such weird ways, like, in terms of, like, odd timing, that it kind of gets me, like, I like this guy. Like, I know what kind of characters that this is going to be. So I would say those two were the ones, at least in the first 6 issues, that really got me.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Rick's character in the very beginning of this book. Like you said, the just notion of, like, what would you do if you woke up and all of humanity was dead? And he did a really good job at, like, well, Kirkman did a really good job at really wanting you to be like, okay, Rick, like, be smart about this. What are you going to do? Like, you know, there's signs of, like, you know, doors being blocked off and things like that. And he still, like, attempts to open them and do things. And because he's just curious. He's confused about the world that he's in now. And, you know, the one thing that he knows to do is, like, okay, I have to get back home. And lo and behold, his new neighbor, little kid, just whacks him over the head.
Yep.
And what's his name? Who's the dad's name?
Morgan.
Morgan, that's right. Morgan is just like, oh, snap. He's still alive, dude. Like, chill out. Like, come on. And
it's actually sad seeing, like, Dwight, Morgan's son.
Yeah.
Because you kind of know the fate. I'm like, oh, Dwight. Yeah, that's so sad. Yeah.
Yeah, you know where that's going. And I was legitimately going to say my two other favorite characters in this book were Glenn and Carl. There's a part in the book where they're finally starting to, you know, be okay with Rick being in there. It's been a couple weeks, a couple months, however. And it looks like Shane and Rick are going to go hunting. And then the kids are going to be play together, and then the women are going to be doing laundry.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the kids talks to Carl and was like, do you think my dad's coming back? And Carl's just like, your dad's dead.
Yeah, like it was very dry. Yeah.
It was very, very dry. And I could not stop laughing at this reread when it happened. I was like, oh my God, like, calm down. Like, give her some hope.
But it was good foreshadowing for the type of character that Carl, although he was 7, Carl was, like, he was meant, like, you knew he was ready for whatever was going to come, because he's, like, already accepted, you know, although you see him, yes, there's signs when you see his mom or his dad in danger, and, you know, he's obviously scared, of course, he's 7. But you were able to see signs like, oh, man, this kid's cold.
Oh, yeah, like, when you see him practicing with the gun, you know, it's just a dad teaching him how to shoot a gun. That's all I saw. But when he actually gets to use the gun on a zombie, it's so funny because that one panel, it makes it look like the gun is like 7 times bigger than his hands. And so he's just like he's just carrying it in an awkward way and just like putting it in the zombie's face.
And I'm pretty sure when he actually shoots, when he kills the zombie on that panel that you're talking about, he even has like his tongue sticking out, like he's like he's got like the concentration, like he's got the look, everything is already set up for that. I'm trying to see if I can find it where I'm at here. I think I'm pretty close.
I am on the next page for it, and no, he doesn't have his tongue sticking out. It's just the hilarious thing also is, of course, he, just like in the show, and you should say just like in the comic, but he is wearing the hat, which is like 2 sizes too big. And so he just looks goofy when he's shooting the zombie. And it's awesome. I absolutely love seeing these characters.
And it doesn't even look like he has a handgun. It looks like he has like an Uzi.
Yeah. But I think it's just the way the action of the gun is.
Yeah.
But this actually goes into my next question. Who is your least favorite character in this particular story?
I mean, I guess I will have to go Shane, mainly because his, I felt he was more fleshed out on the show. And when I'm reading it here, although I remember that he did die rarely soon, his characterization was very erratic. And it was more like a scorned lover kind of thing, where I don't know. I kind of like the way I see this, and it's kind of hard when you've already have a reference point to this character, but you saw a raw intensity. It's like a tension was building. You never really saw that here. It can be where he looks just like a regular guy, and then the next panel he's just screaming, and it just felt like he had a couple of screws loose. And I guess when you absolutely fall in love with someone because of a moment, and you know that having this guy comes back, I guess it can mess with you, but I don't know why. He just wasn't really fleshed out. It just looked like this had to be... It looked like Kirkman was already... He was trying to establish nobody's off-limits in a book like this. And in the first arc, I'm eliminating someone very important. Because when Amy died in that little campfire, shootout, I guess you can kind of feel it because, you know, you're learning a little bit about Andrea, you're learning a little bit about Dale, but Amy was always one of those background characters. But Shane's been in the forefront. You saw him from the very beginning as a partner, and then you find out, okay, now he's in love with his partner's wife, now because the husband is back, you know. So I felt like there could have been a little bit more to it, but I didn't find him interesting, like rereading the book.
Yeah, you know, when I was rereading this, you know, he, like you said, he was very scorn lover, and it made me think, like, and I paid really close attention this time of how much time had passed throughout this first six issues. And from reading it, it really does look and sound and read like several months are zooming past. Yeah. Very quickly, very, very quickly. And the way they describe when the whole thing went down as far as the apocalypse, you know, everybody being infected and everything else, you got to think, like, you fell in, like, this couldn't have been like I fell in love with her, you know, when we went to Georgia or Atlanta. Yeah. With Shane. Like, in my mind, there's got to be something of, like, he had these feelings beforehand. We didn't get to see this. And now that Rick is out of the way, thank God. Now I can make my move, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, and that also made me think, like, gosh, they're just... The way they explain it still doesn't give me enough explanation of why would you leave your husband in the hospital. It doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, Shane does a pretty good job in terms of his anger and, you know, kind of like talking about, oh, well, Lori, we just felt that he was going to be safest in the hospital because, you know, those are very well protected kind of areas. And they're like, so she ended up going to, you know, be with her. Well, she intended to want to go to be with her mom, but it never got to that point. I mean, I can see the rationale behind it, but in a way, I'm like you. Where I can't see myself, but again, I'm not in a zombie apocalypse. But it's hard to know, like, man, I am straight up leaving my loved one here. I'm leaving this person to die. And I'm just hoping that the hospital doesn't get taken over. But, I mean, I guess in a way, I mean, if you're in a coma, you know, by you unplugging them, I mean, they're not getting any kind of oxygen supply or anything. They're technically dying anyways, so maybe they thought that this was the best idea. And in this case, I guess maybe it was, because they were lucky enough that Rick was able to be untouched and he came too. But it wasn't very fleshed out, but they at least gave a very, you know, one, they gave one panel of history of why this decision was made.
Yeah. For me, I think my least favorite character in this entire story would have to be Donna. Donna was a character that just nagged and nagged and nagged and nagged. And, of course, we know what happens to these characters. but I'm just like, man, like, when, because I think at the moment of the campfire, everything's so joyful and they're learning about each other. It's a very sensitive moment of, like, personal stuff. You know something's going to happen. You know, like, my thought process when I turned the page was, man, that fire is going to attract zombies. Like,
yeah.
Like, that's a big fire. And they never really showed that big of a fire on other pages when they were, like, camping out or doing whatever or keeping watch or anything.
I was actually really surprised to see zombies on the... Because, you know them as walkers. But they actually, I think it was Glenn, mentioned in one of the texts, and he actually said the word zombies. And I was like, whoa, they said zombies?
Yeah.
So I think, like, later on, they had to change it, because I think zombies is, like, something that wasn't able, like, they weren't able to use that word. Or they wanted to just,
be
differentiate
different.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, be different. But I was really thrown off when I saw the word zombie, because that's just, man, that's not Walking Dead talk, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And so, but like, the first time I remember really disliking Donna was when they were doing laundry. And she's like, well, why do the men have to go out hunting? And why do we have to do the laundry, you know? And, Lori says it's not about women, doing women's work. It's about getting it done correctly. Because I don't think Rick has ever cleaned. He couldn't even clean clothes with a machine. I would really hate for him to try to do it in this dirty pond water. And she just always had something to, like, cause blame to somebody else, to complain about this or that. And so,
I mean, she sounds like that typical
grumpy old lady from next door.
The grumpy old, like, southern lady that's kind of there. That you're walking the dog and she's, like, looking at you from the second floor, like, out the window, like, that dog better not poop in my yard.
Yeah.
Even though they know, like, you're walking with a bag, like, a little poop bag to, like, pick it up.
Yeah.
It's like, it better not, like, don't even walk on my sidewalk. And it's technically not your sidewalk, but they claim it as their sidewalk. That's kind of, like, how she reminds. And, I mean, in a way, I've known so many of those that when you actually see them in their environment, they're actually so sweet, but they just complain about everything that it's like that didn't bother me or maybe it's just, most Latin grandmas that I know, they're always complaining and they're always screaming, but they're happy.
Uh-huh.
In a weird way that I don't know why. I found her I thought of her as like the grandma of the group, although she was complaining, with Dale and having Amy and Andrea staying with her. And she's like, oh, that is so unchristian that like two women are sleeping with him and stuff like that. I found her more funny because of her grumpiness.
Yeah.
But I could definitely see why you would be annoyed.
So, what did you take? Like, did this book at all, you talked about that last page and how that like, whoa,
Yes.
But did this book take you by surprise? Like, was there something that you just weren't expecting, and when you finally flipped that page, it blew your mind?
I won't say anything blew my... I'm not going to say it blew my mind in terms of story. What I will say, though, what blew my mind in the sense was, wow, this is a Walking Dead comic without Charlie Adler doing art. Because the first volume was Tony Moore.
Yeah.
And Tony Moore was the one, a co-creator, and, he had a really bad breakup with Robert Kirkman.
Yeah.
Like, it was bad.
Is he still getting all those royalties still?
I think they ended up, like, settling, but it was not, it's not like what maybe he kind of deserves for getting, for kind of starting this up. But even within, like, the TV show, they weren't even giving him props, kind of like the whole thing with Bill Finger. Like, it was one of those. So seeing the way Rick was drawn and seeing how Lori was drawn and seeing Andrea, these characters that I know, yes, their characters grow. But I still kind of remember that although Rick would be with a beard and now he had like a buzz cut, he still looked like Rick. Seeing Tony Moore's version of Rick and his version of Lori And Dale, I was like, wow, I'm not used to this. Because even the inks were even different. So I was like, yeah, because Cliff Rathburn, I'm like, man, this, even the world looks, the walkers look different. So I would say that was the most, because it didn't feel like Walking Dead. Yes, it was a black and white comic book with walkers and characters that I know, but because the world was painted so differently, that I would say was, it took a while. It took a while again to be like, no, this is Rick. Although Rick and Shane, if from a distance they look exactly the same with the square jawed and, you know, they look exactly like the same character. The only reason you know it's Shane is because he has that baseball cap on.
Well, I feel like Shane has more of like a square.
He had broader shoulders. Yeah.
So,
but I'm saying just from like a distance, if you saw them as secondary characters, the hat was really what helped differentiate, just because some of these characters look the same.
Yeah.
But that was my big wow.
So I have to ask, you know, what were a few, if you had any, of your favorite panels throughout this volume? Like, what really, because since you brought up the artist of this book, like, what really made you like, wow, this is going to be a great book to read, you know, when it comes to art?
When it came to art, it's really like those splash pages. When you see them, even from the very beginning, when Rick ends up opening the door of the cafeteria and you get the first very detailed, because there's something about, I honestly didn't notice that Tony Moore did this too, but if you read every single comic in The Walking Dead, there's always that one specific page that you know it's meant to be the splash page, where the grays are even more polished, the whites for some reason pop out more, the blacks, everything just feels to be so clean compared to like the rugginess of every other panel. So, I mean, going from the very beginning, when you're looking at the cafeteria, when you're seeing the moments that you mentioned with like like Dwight, when Dwight knocks Rick with the shovel, those moments when you see I want to say it was Rick when he finally gets when the car broke down,
yeah,
and he's just like looking off in the distance and he's like, damn it. There's like those kind of pages. For some reason, those pictures always really jump out to me, and those are the ones that I really love. You see Rick when he's in Atlanta, and you see that he's riding the horse, and you have that really cool like camera angle that it looks like it's from the ground floor where you get to see the skyscrapers. Those were my moments, you know, the walkers ripping the horse apart, because that's the first time that you actually get to see, whoa, this book is really, really gory.
Yeah.
Like, you knew it was dirty, and you knew, yeah, it was dirty and grimy, but you didn't know exactly that it was going to be that. But I will say that the last page, when Carl does finally, you know, when he kills Shane, and he kind of mentions, like, he's crying in his dad's arms, and he's like, it's not the same when you're not killing somebody that's dead. And he's like, it's not supposed to be. You're like, man, the psychological damage, like just that panel, like you're seeing a best friend, and for Carl, that's like Uncle Shane, you know?
Yeah.
Like he's just, you know, because, you know, cops are always sticking together. That's family. So he literally just shot like Uncle Shane in the neck and killed him. But, you know, it's not the same. And to have a 7-year-old that you already saw signs when he's talking to Sophia, he's like, oh, do you think my dad's ever going to come back? Nah, he's dead. And then seeing him show that, like, man, a 7-year-old just killed someone. I was like, man, this story's up for something. But it's nice to see even Tony Moore, who, I mean, I love his art style, but again, this is 10 years ago. I mean, art does, you know, evolve. He does a great job in his art showing facial expressions that you can definitely feel the pain and the anguish that these characters are going through when they lose someone or when they thought that they were going to lose someone. And he did a really good job. One of the main highlights was Lori. Lori's face and her facial interactions and everything were all over the place. Because, I mean, she's jumping from thinking she lost her husband. She got her husband back. Oh, my gosh, I almost died. Oh, man, I almost lost you, Rick. Oh, what about Carl? Even from her being angry because Rick was going to have him start, you know, carrying his own gun. Like, I think that she was a highlight in terms of showing how much range Toni Moore had in, you know, drawing faces, which is usually tough.
Yeah. You know, whenever it comes to art, I think my two favorite sequences, as well as one panel, the rain scene when they are going to get the guns, and that entire sequence of them fighting off the zombies and trying to get the guns back inside the cart and getting them into camp. I love the attention to detail there. And when Joe is beating the crap or pistol whipping the crap out of that zombie, because once again, you see the facial expressions, you see the emotion.
He's like, no, you killed my family.
Yeah. And you hadn't seen much of Joe at all at that point. You know, he had said maybe one or two things as far as giving them directions on, you know, how to get to the gun shop at that point. And then he said that he, you know, when they were in the campfire, that, you know, what happened to his family or whatever. But the one panel that I absolutely love as far as the attention to detail was the death of Amy, the bite to the neck. I think that was where I was like, oh, snap. Like,
yeah,
you know, there goes one, you know? And so that was the first death. And because we're talking about The Walking Dead, to, at the very end of this book, have this big band of misfits together, and then by the end of the book, three are down for the count.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what did you think of, like, did you ever get this feeling at the very end of the sixth issue, at least, was like, oh man, like, when are the other ones gonna die? Or did you always think, like, oh, they're gonna, you know, I'm gonna have hope with these characters, they're gonna pull through? You know, what were your thought processes with this book in particular? I don't usually ask this question, but because it's The Walking Dead.
Yeah. I don't know, it's kind of hard what I was... It's kind of hard to remember how I thought 10 years ago in regards to, like, you know, reading this story for the first time. But the little bit that's kind of, like, popping up in my head was... I wanted certain characters, like, there were certain ones that I already gravitated to, and I'm like, oh, man, please don't take these.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, it's those kind, because later on, one of my favorite characters was Dale. So, I just loved what Dale represented. So, when I'm seeing, like, I'm like, oh, man, don't have him be the one. But it was really scary knowing that you're going to be picking up a book, and you never knew. Because, yes, Amy's death, although... it didn't have big ramifications, like, in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
Seeing someone just straight up, you're like, oh, no, they got one. Like, it was like, whoa, man, this is issue 3, you know, or issue 4. This is way too soon. And then, you know, later on, so it was...
Well, it did very much push that narrative that Rick was wanting, was like, hey, we are not safe here. We are definitely not safe. And it very much proved it. And I liked how that went about, especially how that turned into the argument that Shane and Rick had at the very end of the book.
Yeah, I mean, Rick was very, I mean, he's like visionary. So he was always able to see more than what you're just seeing right now on the surface level. So, you know, Shane is more of that, oh, the army's going to come, the government's going to come, they're going to... But they're like, what evidence have you seen that that's going to happen? I mean, are we just going to be sitting here like idiots, like sitting ducks, while we're surrounded by trees and we don't know what's going to happen? Like, he always saw things in the, you know, in the long run, like macro. And that's what made Rick a great leader, where he was able to kind of see things that just on the surface, most of the people just never saw.
Yeah, and, you know, the whole argument that the government was going to come, that whole thing, that was brought up in the very beginning with Morgan.
Yeah.
And then you see it again when Rick is reunited with his family. They talk to Shane. They say, hey, we all banded outside of Atlanta, so that way the government could see us and they'll pick us up. But like I said before, this book is like in the progression of months.
Mm-hmm.
And still, at the end of all those months, Shane is still arguing, oh, the government will come, the government will come, the government will come. I'm like, dude, at this point, nobody's coming. Like, you got to come to terms with that. You got to go.
So while he was just thinking about the government's going to come, the government's going to come, Rick, because he's a forward thinker, he's like, listen, we need to get guns. We need to train these people on how to defend themselves because these women don't know how to use the guns. They won't even know what to do. We need to get our children ready.
Yeah.
So even in that sense, I mean, and he was very smart, smart on his toes. Rick's like, I mean, the whole city's overrun. You would think it's, he's like, no, I mean, gun stores, these things are always locked up. I mean, he was just ahead of the game. And it was just, and you know, of course, yes, you get that within several months, you know, you think you can start thinking, but he was always thinking outside of the box.
Yeah.
Ahead. And luckily he was, because the group would have never have survived without, you know, these training moments and, you know, Rick actually thinking ahead.
Yeah. Now, I don't usually get to ask this question because not a whole lot of people that I interview know a lot about the artist and the writer. But because you're such a big fan of these books, and of course you are just a big comic book nerd like me, we kind of keep in the know of all these things. So, do you have any tidbits about Kirkman or the few artists that have been on this book, you know, as far as like just like, I guess, behind the scenes of, you know, just random stuff that you know, because I will say when me and Jake talked about the Blackest Night, you know, we got to talk a little bit about Geoff Johns because there was a whole piece in the back of that book that was basically a director's cut. And so we got to talk a little bit about them. So is there anything particularly you want to talk about as far as Kirkman and the writer, like him writing this book and what you thought his process was and how he, because Kirkman, I feel like, has always been in the realm of dark, especially mm-hmm. with The Walking Dead. And then, you know, he went into the superhero genre with Invincible. And, you know, that was basically just like humanoid Walking Dead. Without zombies, it was just as bloody, and
yeah,
you couldn't, you know, promise that there were your favorite character was gonna stay alive, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as Kirkman or any of the artists that were on this book, do you have any I guess, like I said, behind the scenes or you know?
Well, I mean, there aren't many behind the scenes stuff, because honestly I never really looked for it. Because my version, I mean, and this is something that I would love to, as a fan, get back to. I liked not being in the know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there is such a thing as knowing too much.
And we've talked about that in our other show.
Yeah, exactly. So I kind of done, you know, I've done the same thing since then, where I never really searched for things. But I will say that I always did read the letter hacks. You know, always had the letters in the back where he's just answering fan mail. And I love that his approach was very, it's very simple. From his writing style to everything, it was a very simplistic, where there were just a lot of times where I remember, you know, there's one fan mail that was sent to him. And he was asking like, oh, how is it possible that, you know, these characters are still using the same gas in the car, because after a certain period, gas turns into something, you know, and they're giving like the whole scientific fact about how, what happens to gas and how it decomposes and it no longer gas, pretty much.
Yeah.
And Kirkman is, I have Walking Dead people. I have like people that are dead walking in a comic and they eat people. Think it's not that serious. and I love that response, because in reality, That's kind of like what it is. Sometimes, you know, we're trying to implement too much of a realism, or, you know, something like this, something as simple as gas. And how is this simple? How is it possible that it's been 5 years and this gas that has been sitting in the car, you know, they could just siphon it and it works? No, that's not. He's like, dude, we got dead people, and other things. You know, there's people flying and superpowers. It's not that serious. And I love that he says that's his approach to everything, where nothing was really out of bounds because, you know, again, we're talking about people that are dead that are walking, you know? So I always appreciated his simplistic approach. Now, I have never read, if you ask me right now, is Charlie Adler, you know, a white dude, a black dude, a Spanish dude? Where I know nothing about Charlie Adler besides I love his art. But that's just me trying to be in the moment when I open the book for the first time.
Yeah.
Instead of just media or whatever, just trying to tell me what I should be seeing when I'm reading a book.
Yeah, for sure. Now, yeah. For my last question, imagine you're in the comic shop and you meet somebody that has never seen the TV show, has never read an indie book. Basically, imagine walking into the comic shop and seeing you when you asked for this recommendation. What is your elevator pitch for The Walking Dead to somebody who has no idea what it is? What would you say to them? How would you get them to pick up this volume one?
Jesus Christ. Hey, you couldn't tell me this as like a text? And I could have just faked it.
I gotta put you on the spot, man. This is something that I'll be honest. This is the first time I'm asking anybody this question.
Hey, you bleep hole.
I will be adding it to my list, but I just thought about it. You know, this was a big book. You know, and I feel like that's one of the most important things whenever it comes to comics, and especially those who love these books. You know. This has got to be a book that you've recommended several times. And of course, these people have seen the show, probably, but or at least know about the show. I'm saying if you walk in and there's somebody completely oblivious to the comic book world, yeah. and they're like, hey, you know what? This Marvel and DC thing with the movies, it's kind of annoying, but I want to get into comics. What should I read? What would you tell them to get them to pick up this volume one?
Imagine waking up to a world that you thought that you knew, to only know that everything that you knew and loved was gone, and now you need to search. Now you're going to be following the adventure of one character as he finds his way, as he pretty much learns his way into a new world that he's never learned before, although it looks familiar, on his search for family, friendship, grief, mourning. Any adjective that you can find in terms of love and family and hurt and grief, add it all together into just a beautifully written, told story. I don't know. I mean, normally the way I tell stories, I'm more of a rambler. So I'm pretty sure I would have like spoiled something, but I would, if I had to think of an elevator, you know, just a couple of, you know, 10 seconds going to a floor, I would just say, imagine living a life that you've always known. You went into a coma, you woke up, and the world that you knew no longer existed. It just so happened to be you woke up, and zombies are running the world. I mean, that would probably be my, you know, floor one to floor four pitch.
Nice. No, I mean, it's a very interesting thing to see how people would react to the excitement of, you know, for me, you know, one of my favorite books whenever it comes to comics, of course, being Superman, not right now, but, you know, but, you know, when it came to, you know, Superman Earth One, we both love that, yep. That story, you know. For me, that pitch would be, well, imagine the one story everybody knows, that being of Superman. You can't know, I don't think anybody doesn't know about Superman. Same thing as, you know, everybody knows about Batman.
Mm-hmm.
But you would have to say, imagine Superman the way that you had always known him, but with a, you know, for me, whenever the big change of that story is with when he goes to Metropolis.
Yes.
And for me, that would be my hook for the pitch. It's just like, imagine Superman using his powers the way everybody else would.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be like, what? Superman does that? Boom, right there. So so I really like the pitch. I think I would pick it up for sure. I did pick it up. Have it. And I will say, if you are down, and if I can find some time in this hectic schedule that I have, I'd totally be down for a Walking Dead podcast.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would love to just reread the whole thing and kind of like just document, you know, like just how it goes. Because I'm just thinking, I mean, this is like issue 6. I mean, we're going to Herschel's farm. I'm like, man, in like issue 19, I think it's like we finally get to meet like Michonne. I'm just like, oh, we're so close to just so many characters. Because, I mean, this was such a... When you see The Walking Dead, the first volume is so elementary. I mean, it's vital, but it's so elementary because all the major players you just start to see in just a little bit, especially in trade format, that I'm like, man, I'm just two trades away from, like, Michonne, a couple after that from, you know, seeing the governor, from Rick losing his freaking hand, you know? There's just so much to it that I'm just like, oh, man, that's when you're really getting into, like, the meat of what this story is. Right now, it's still so innocent, even though it's weird to say that you're reading The Walking Dead. Like, three people have died, but it still feels very innocent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's kind of like when you're watching the Wonder Woman movie. Like, she's like, no, Ares is dead. Everyone should be happy. You know, it's just like, yeah, bro, there's a lot of people that have died. But it's not going to, and that's kind of how it feels here. Like, there's still a sense of hope within this group somewhere there. But I'm like, man, you have no idea what you're getting. like when you know the story. So yeah. It's kind of, I want to see how they grew. Like, when did it change? Because I don't remember.
For sure. So, Mark, where can they find you?
You can find me at Mark Reads Comics. That's my personal Twitter page. I'm usually only talking about DC Comics. Sometimes I'll sprinkle in like some like you know indie stuff, but my heart is at DC Comics, so that's usually I kind of just want to tweet about what makes me happy and what I love. And if I got nothing to tweet, I just won't tweet.
I need to get to that point. I really do. I absolutely do. But you also have a fantasy football podcast, right?
Oh, okay. With I didn't Jake. Know if in a show like this, if I just plug everything.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, and... yeah. Well, then, yeah. I mean, I also do with my co-host Jake a fantasy football podcast where we just get to talk football. We recap the current week that we, you know, of football that happened this past Sunday, and we kind of talk about some of the stars, some of the surprises, some of the busts in that fantasy week, and who we kind of recommend either picking up for the waiver wires for the following week. So if you like fantasy football, follow us at FFL Pod, which is Fantasy Football Legion. And, well, I mean, we got a show together where we review DC Comics.
Yes.
And that is the Comic Book Legion podcast, and you can find us at CB_Legion.
Yes, of course. And, of course, guys, you can always find me at FanboyClay on Twitter and on Instagram, as well as you can find this show on Twitter at Fanboy Comics Pod. Remember, guys, this show is going to be on Anchor. It is part of the Comic Book Legion umbrella or network, but I am putting it on Anchor. I want to play around with that app. If you guys have any questions or want to be on the show, remember that you can send in voicemails through that app. I really want to use that. I want to, you know, grow a community on there, and I want to have a lot of fun. So remember to do that. I am going to relaunch seasons 1 and 2 as well pretty soon on Anchor so we can have all those episodes on there as well. But yeah, guys, with that, we're going to call it a night. Have a good one.
See ya.